information I can to assist you in your—"
His voice trailed off. He was looking at Skullduggery.
"My, oh my, you're a skeleton."
"I am."
"As I live and breathe, figuratively speaking, of course, as I neither live nor breathe, but a skeleton, a talking skeleton at that."
"I am very impressive," Skullduggery said. "Who are you?"
"My name is Oisin, and I am here to answer whatever questions you may have."
"Well, that's good news, because we're looking for a few answers."
"How did you manage that, then?"
Oisin asked. "I'm sorry?"
"Becoming a skeleton, that's a new one on me."
"Well, it's a long story." Oisin waved his hand.
"Better not tell me. This stone will only work for a short while before it needs to be charged. I don't have a lot of time to give you the answers you seek."
"Then we'd better start."
"Yes, we had better. Was it painful, though, losing your flesh?"
I don't mean to be rude, Oisin, but aren't you the one supposed to be answering questions, not asking them?" Oisin laughed.
"I admit I'm a little too curious for my own good. On the other hand, I do have an in-depth knowledge of the stories of the ancients, so, in many ways, I'm the ideal candidate. Better suited to this than my colleagues, believe me. Before we get started, could I ask what century this is?"
"The 21st,
Stephanie said.
21st!
He repeated, laughing with delight.
"Oh, my! So this is what the future looks like, eh? Kind of gloomy and cluttered. I always thought it'd be brighter, you know. So what's been happening in the world?"
You want us to tell you everything you missed?"
"Well, not everything, just the high points. What language am I speaking, by the way?"
Stephanie frowned.
"English."
"English, eh? Marvellous! I've never spoken English before. How does it sound?"
Fine, I suppose. Does the stone translate what you're saying?"
"Yes, it does. I could have used something like this on my travels. I'll tell you that much. It would have really impressed the ladies."
He started to chuckle, then stopped.
"Not that I travelled far, or at all. I don't trust boats, you see. If nature had intended us to travel across water, we would have been provided with fins."
"Can we ask you a question?" Skullduggery asked. "Again, I don't want to be rude, but if the stone runs out of power before we learn what we need..." The old man clapped his hands and rubbed them together.
"Of course, my boy. Say no more. Ask me your first question."
"You're an expert on the ancients."
"Yes, I am. I'm the one charged with the task of documenting their existence. It's a great honor, even if it does leave me with precious little time to travel. Not that I would, even if I could, but it'd be nice to have options, you know."
"Yes, anyway, we need to know about the scepter. We need to know its power." Oisin nodded.
"The scepter of the ancients was created to destroy, and destroy it does. There is nothing that will not crumble to dust under its glare."
"Is there any kind of defense against it?" Oisin shook his head.
"No shield, no spell, no barrier. It can't be stopped and it can't be destroyed."
"What about its power source?" Stephanie asked.
"A single crystal, a black crystal, embedded in its hilt, capable of channeling the energy that's poured into it."
"And can the crystal be destroyed?"
Oisin gave a little frown.
"I've thought about this, actually. I know more about the scepter than anyone else since the time of the ancients. Certainly more than any of my colleagues. And while there is no record of a weakness, we have translations of texts that suggest the crystal can be destroyed from within."
"How?"
Stephanie asked.
I don't really know."
"Who created the scepter?" Skullduggery asked. Oisin puffed out his chest.
"The scepter was created by the ancients as a weapon to be used against their gods." For 1 year they toiled, out of sight and in darkness, so that the gods could not see what they were creating.
His chest deflated and he smiled.
That's a direct quote from one of the first texts we found. I found it, actually. The others were so jealous. That's probably why they didn't want me to be the one to answer your questions.
Stephanie frowned. You're not supposed to be here?
We had a vote. I voted for me. No one else did. They're just jealous. They said I'd waste time, talk too much. So I stole the stone and went away for a few days to imprint it with my consciousness. They can't imprint anything over it, you see. And now here I am.
He beamed. Then his whole body faded, became suddenly transparent, and his beaming smile vanished.
Oh, time seems to be running out. If you have any more questions...
Who created the crystal? Skullduggery asked quickly.
Well, if you'll allow me to quote from the text that I discovered. The Faceless Ones created the crystal, and the crystal sang to the Faceless Ones when an enemy neared. But when the ancients approached, the crystal was silent, and it did not sing to the Faceless Ones, and the Faceless Ones did not know it was taken.
So their security system had a blind spot, Stephanie said.
It looks that way,
Oisin said, nodding. His image grew even fainter, and he held up a hand and gazed through it.
This is sort of unnerving.
The scepter has returned, Skullduggery said. Oisin looked up.
What?
It was uncovered recently, then hidden again. We need to know how to find it.
Oh, my,
Oisin said.
If the wrong sort of person takes possession of the scepter...
It'll be bad, we know. Oisin, how do we find it? The old man vanished for a moment, then flickered back into sight.
I don't know, dear boy. Who hid it?
My uncle,
Stephanie said.
He realized it was too powerful for anyone to own.
A wise man, it seems. Of course, a truly wise man would return it to the place he found it. Failing that, somewhere similar.
Skullduggery straightened. Of course. A smile popped up on Oisin's face.
Have I helped you?
You have. I know where it is. Thank you, Oisin. Oisin nodded proudly.
I knew I could do this. I knew I could answer questions and not talk too much. That's what I told them right before they called for a vote. I said, listen, I can...
And he vanished, and the Echo Stone stopped glowing. Stephanie looked at Skullduggery.
Well?
Gordon followed the example of the last of the ancients and buried the scepter deep within the earth. It's in the caves.
What caves?
Beneath Gordon's land is a network of caves and tunnels, stretching for miles in each direction. It's a death trap, even for the most powerful sorcerer.
Why?
There are creatures in those caves who feed off magic. It would be the safest place to hide the scepter. I should have thought of it sooner. Beneath Gordon's house, a world of magic and wonder Stephanie never knew was there. Bit by bit, she was seeing how close magic had been to her when she was growing up, if only she had known where to look. It was such a strange sensation. But what had Skullduggery told her when they were about to enter the sanctuary? Better get used to that feeling. Skullduggery closed his hand over the puzzle box, and the top slid over, hiding the Echo Stone once again.
Maybe Oisin has more information,
Stephanie said.
How long does it take to recharge the stone?
About a year. She blinked.
Oh, well. Okay, then, that's probably a little too long. Still, who knows what else he could help people with. I'm sure it'll be invaluable to, you know, folks who are interested in history. Historians, like.
Actually, we can't tell anyone we were here.
You could tell Ghastly. I'm sure he'd forgive the little trespass if you told him what we'd found.
Not really. See, this is his family's chamber. It's a sacred thing. Us being here is inexcusable.
What? You said this was just like a storage shed. You didn't say anything about it being sacred.
Now you know why I have difficulty keeping friends. Skullduggery put the box back where he had found it. Stephanie was still staring at him.
"Is this disrespectful?" she asked. "Is this like dancing on someone's grave?"
"A little worse than that," he admitted. "It's like digging up that grave, taking out the body, rifling through its pockets, and then dancing on the whole thing. It's a little more than disrespectful."
"Then yes," she said as he walked over. "I can see why you have difficulty keeping friends."
Skullduggery waved his hand, and every candle in the chamber flickered out. They were plunged into darkness. Stephanie opened the door and peeked out. The corridor was long and silent and empty. She stepped out and Skullduggery followed, closing the door behind them. They crept along the corridor, up the stone steps, and out of the wood and iron door. They moved quickly through the gallery. The corners were the worst, as they were always expecting a vampire to round them just as they approached. They were nearing the main hall when Skullduggery held up his hand. Ahead of them, crouching in the middle of the corridor, was a vampire. Stephanie stopped breathing. Its back was to them, so they moved backwards, careful not to make a sound. They were just turning when Stephanie saw something out of the corner of her eye. She clutched Skullduggery's arm. The other vampire was approaching from the opposite direction. They sank behind a marble pillar, trapped. Across from them was an archway leading into another section of the gallery, but Stephanie was pretty sure that even if they made it through without being seen, they'd be cut off. Their only way out was back in the main hall, with the harness, but their chances of making it without being torn to pieces were getting slimmer with every moment. Skullduggery had his powers, and he had his gun, but she knew he didn't hold out much hope that he'd be able to fend off one of those creatures, let alone two. He turned to her, hand raised, one finger pointing at her, then pointing at the ground. "Stay." That finger pointing at himself, then pointing at the arch. "Go." Stephanie's eyes widened, and she shook her head, but now that finger was pressed to his mouth. If he'd had lips, she knew his finger would be on them. She didn't want to. She didn't want to agree to this, but she knew she had no choice. Skullduggery took his gun from his jacket and passed it to her, and gave her a nod, and then immediately sprang up and lunged for the arch. The vampire approaching from behind saw him and broke into a run. The vampire up ahead turned and sprang off its haunches, and Stephanie shrank back as it passed the pillar and took off through the archway, joining the hunt for the intruder. The gun was surprisingly heavy in her hand as Stephanie crept out and started running for the main hall. Her footsteps echoed loudly in the dark corridors, but she didn't care. The only thing going through her mind was the fact that she needed to get out. She took each corner quickly, knowing the threat was behind her, and every time she took a corner, she let herself glance back. Empty corridor. Nothing coming for her. Not yet. She was approaching the main hall. Just a few more turns and she'd be there. She tucked the gun into her coat. She'd need both hands to strap herself into the harness. She turned the next corner and skidded to a stop. No. No, this couldn't be right. She looked up at the blank wall, her eyes wide. This couldn't be right. This wall should not have been here. She'd taken a wrong turn. She'd taken a wrong turn in this stupid gallery, and now she didn't know where she was. She was lost. She turned away from the dead end, wanting to scream at herself in frustration. She hurried back the way she had come, glancing through every arch and doorway she passed, looking for something she recognized. Everything looked the same in the gloom. Why weren't there any signs? Where were the signs? There was an intersecting corridor up ahead. Could that be it? Stephanie tried remembering their trail from the hall to the iron door and mentally reversing it. Had they turned at an intersecting corridor? She cursed herself for not paying attention, cursed herself for relying on Skullduggery to lead the way. They must have come from there. Every turn behind her seemed to lead to the dead end, so they must have come from there. She was 10 paces from the intersecting corridor when the vampire emerged from a small hall up ahead. It saw her instantly. She didn't even have time to duck down. The corridor was 10 paces away. The vampire was about 30 paces beyond that. She couldn't go back. If she went back, she'd be cut off. She had to go forward. She didn't have a choice. Stephanie bolted. The vampire kicked off and bounded towards her. It was going to cover the 30 paces faster than she would cover the 10. They ran straight at each other, and the vampire leapt. Stephanie dropped and slid beneath it, and she felt the rushing air as it passed overhead. She came out of the slide on her feet and twisted her body, then sprinted down the intersecting corridor. This was it. She recognized the statue. Only a few more turns.
She heard the vampire behind her. Every corner she turned cost her precious moments, but the vampire just leapt to the outer wall and sprang diagonally to the wall beyond the corner. It was closing the distance between them. Stephanie burst through the doors to the main hall, and Skullduggery was there, launching himself at the vampire as it reached for her. They crashed backwards and tumbled.
"Get out of here!"
Skullduggery shouted, kicking the vampire away and scrambling to his feet. Stephanie grabbed the harness and hit the button. Her arms were almost jerked out of their sockets as the harness withdrew. She rose to the skylight too fast, and when the harness hit the top, she lost her grip. She managed to get one hand around the edge of the skylight as her body swung wildly. Her other hand clawed on, and she gritted her teeth and pulled herself up. Her head and shoulders emerged into the night air, and she hauled herself up the rest of the way to tumble out onto the roof. Fighting to catch her breath, she immediately went back to the skylight and looked down, just in time to see the vampire leap. She cried out and fell backwards as the vampire burst through the closed section of the skylight, showering her with glass. It hit the roof in a crouch. Stephanie didn't even have time to get to her feet before it dived at her. She turned away, and its claws raked across her coat but didn't penetrate the material, although the impact slammed her to the roof again. The vampire overshot but spun as soon as it landed, snarling. Its fangs dripped with saliva, and its eyes locked onto hers. For a moment, neither of them made a move. Then Stephanie slowly got to her hands and knees. The vampire hissed, but she didn't break eye contact. She tucked her feet beneath her and squatted. The vampire was waiting for her to make a sudden move. The gun was in her pocket, but she didn't go for it. Stephanie moved slowly. She kept her eyes open, didn't blink, didn't do anything that might give it an excuse to resume its attack. Her knees straightened, though she stayed bent over. She took her first step to her left. The vampire moved with her. Its eyes blazed with sheer animal ferocity. All it wanted to do was rip her apart. All it wanted was her complete and utter annihilation. She forced herself to keep calm.
"Easy, boy,"
she said softly, and the vampire snapped at the air. Its claws clicked against themselves. Even though they hadn't pierced her coat, her back was throbbing in pain. She knew that if it hadn't been for whatever material this coat was made from, that single swipe would have killed her. The vampire began moving towards her. Stephanie started to back away, but the moment she tried moving her foot behind her, the vampire's hackles rose. She froze. If it leapt from that distance, it would be on her before she knew what was happening. It kept coming, moving slowly, stalking its prey. The second skylight exploded, and then everything was happening too fast. The vampire broke its eye lock and lunged, but Stephanie was already moving, twisting to the side as the claws lacerated the space where she had just been. The other vampire was on the roof and closing in, and Stephanie sprinted for the edge of the building as she jumped. Her legs hit branches, and she flipped over and was crashing headlong into the tree and falling. She smacked from one branch to the next, each impact spinning her and making her cry out. She hit a branch with her ribs, and the breath rushed out of her, and still she fell. Then there were no more branches, and for a moment it was just her and the sound of rushing air, and then the ground slammed into her from behind. Stephanie lay on the grass, trying to breathe. She could see the tree. She could see the gallery. She could see the sky. Something was falling towards her. Two things. Two figures dropping from the edge of the building. The vampires hit the ground and came at her. The window to her left shattered, and the security alarm pierced the night. Skullduggery landed in front of her. He thrust his hand out, and the air shimmered, and he caught one of the vampires, sending it hurtling back. The second one kept coming, and Skullduggery threw fire at it, but it leapt, cleared the flame, and landed with both feet on Skullduggery's chest. They went down, and Stephanie's body started obeying her again. She got up, still struggling to breathe. The vampire swiped, and Skullduggery's shirt parted, and he cried out in pain. Stephanie wrapped both arms around the vampire's neck and pulled back. It hissed and flailed, and Stephanie stumbled back to avoid its claws. Skullduggery sat up, and he pressed his hand against the vampire. The vampire shot backwards like it had been fired from a cannon. It hit the wall of the building with a sickening thwack and fell to the ground and didn't get up. Stephanie grabbed Skullduggery's arm and dragged him to his feet, and they ran for the car.
Chapter 13 The Red Right Hand. How are you? Stephanie shrugged and managed not to wince. Her entire body ached.
I'm good,
she lied. Skullduggery glanced at her as he drove. Are you hurt? Are you injured?
No, just a bruise or two. I'm fine, really. You don't have to worry about me.
Stephanie, you jumped off a building.
Yes, but the branches broke my fall. Every one of them.
And how were the branches?
A lot unlike pillows.
You could have been killed.
But I wasn't.
But you could have been.
But I wasn't.
I'm not denying that you make a good point, but the fact is you could have been. I've already lost a dear friend to all this, and I don't want that to happen again.
She looked at him. Are you saying you'd be very upset if I died?
Very is such a strong word.
Well, if you teach me some magic, maybe I won't get hurt as bad next time.
You said you weren't hurt.
Are you kidding? I jumped off a building. Of course I'm hurt.
Stephanie.
Yes, Skullduggery?
You can be really annoying at times.
I know. So, where are we going?
We're going to at least find the doorway to the caves. Then we'll concentrate on finding the key to open it. Half an hour later, they were driving into Gordon's estate. Stephanie climbed stiffly out of the canary car and followed Skullduggery inside. The cellar was chilly and dark, and the single bulb hanging amid cobwebs wasn't doing its job very well. Countless years' worth of junk was collecting dust down here, and from somewhere in the dark corners came the occasional scuttle of rats. Stephanie wasn't scared of rats as a rule, but she wasn't too keen on them either, so she stayed away from the corners. Skullduggery had no such qualms. He examined the walls, scanning their surface as he moved sideways along them. Now and then he'd tap the wall, mutter to himself, and move on.
Is this the same as the way into the sanctuary? Stephanie asked. Are you looking for a secret passageway?
You watch too many haunted house movies, he said.
But are you looking for a secret passageway?
Yes, he admitted. But that's just a coincidence.
She pulled up the sleeve of her coat, revealing an ugly bruise on her arm, and covered it up again before Skullduggery glanced over. Did Gordon build the passage? She asked.
No. It was included in the original designs. A few hundred years ago, this was a sorcerer's house.
And he built a secret passageway to the caves. I thought you said the caves were a death trap for sorcerers.
I did say that, yes.
So why did he build himself a shortcut? Was he a stupid sorcerer?
No, he just wasn't a very nice one. He used to drag his enemies down there and leave them to whatever creatures were hungriest.
What a charming history. I can see why my uncle bought the place.
Uh-huh.
Stephanie moved closer. Skullduggery's hand was flat against the wall. He moved it and she could see a slight indentation, almost invisible to the naked eye. That's the lock?
Yes. This is one of those good old-fashioned key-required locks. The kind a spell won't open, damn it.
Can you break it?
I could break it, but then it wouldn't work and we couldn't get the door open.
I meant break through it.
That would work if the door was in the same place as the lock, but things are rarely that straightforward.
So we need the key?
We need the key.
I don't suppose we'll find it on one of Gordon's key rings.
Indeed, this is not a regular key we're looking for.
We don't have to solve a puzzle to get it, do we?
We may.
Stephanie groaned. Oh, how come nothing's ever simple?
Every solution to every problem is simple. It's the distance between the two wherein the mystery lies.
They turned off the light and climbed the stairs out of the dank mustiness of the cellar. They walked into the living room, and a man in a suit that looked almost Victorian in design, turned to them. He had black hair and thin lips, and his right hand, which was skinless, glistened with blood and wet muscle, and before Stephanie could even register surprise, Skullduggery was pulling the gun from his jacket. The man moved as gunshots filled the room, stepping to one side and waving his right hand. She didn't know what he did, but it worked. And no bullets hit him.
Run!
Skullduggery said, pushing her out of the room. She stumbled, and something moved beside her, and she turned as another man came at her. There was something wrong with him, something wrong with his skin, with his features. They didn't look real. They looked almost papery. She tried to hit it, but it was like hitting a bag of air. A fist swung at her, but unlike its body, the fist was heavy and solid, and it snapped her head back. She staggered, and it reached for her, but then Skullduggery was there, hurling it away.
Three more of them came through the front door. Stephanie ran to the stairs, skullduggery covering her escape. Halfway up, she looked back as the man in the suit strolled into the hall. She shouted a warning, and skullduggery turned to face him, but it was too late. Purple vapor gathered in the man's left palm, and he released it in a stream that flowed into skullduggery and arced out behind him and above, flowing back into the man's other hand, forming a circle. Skullduggery dropped to his knees, tried to raise the gun, but couldn't hold it, and it fell to the floor.
"Take him,"
the man said, cutting off the purple stream. Skullduggery sagged, and three of the paper men grabbed him, started dragging him out of the house. The man motioned to the fourth.
"You kill the girl!"
And he walked out. Stephanie sprinted to the landing, the papery thing clumping up the stairs behind her. She ran to Gordon's dark study, slammed the door, and pushed over one of the bookcases. It toppled and crashed, and books spilled across the floor. The door opened a fraction and hit the bookcase. Heavy fists started to pound on it from the other side. She went to the window, opened it, and looked down. Even if she made the drop without breaking her legs, she'd land right in front of the man with the red hand. She backed off, looked around for a weapon. The bookcase slowly scraped across the floor. The door opened wider. Stephanie turned, moved behind the desk, and hid. The pounding continued. She peered out. She could see a papery arm now reaching around, then a shoulder, and a head. She ducked back into hiding. One last heave, and the door was open wide enough for the thing to step over the fallen bookcase. Stephanie stopped breathing. She peeked out. It crossed to the window and leaned out, hands on the sill. Stephanie rose and launched herself forward. It hurt her and tried to turn, but she slammed into it. Its heavy hands slipped off the windowsill and dragged it through, and Stephanie reached down, grabbed its lower leg and hauled. The thing tried to reach back through the window, but it was too late, and out it went with a faint rustle of paper. It landed in a heap, and she saw the man in the suit glare up at her. He waved his arm, and she threw herself away from the window as the air turned purple and the window exploded. Glass shards rained down on her back, but they didn't tear through the coat. She lay where she was, hands over her head, until she heard a car start up. Then she got up, glass and splinters of wood falling from her, and reached the window just in time to see the silver car leave the estate. They'd left her, obviously deciding it wasn't worth the effort to make sure she was dead. Stephanie pulled the crumpled business card from her pocket, got out her phone and dialed the number. The call was picked up almost immediately. She spoke urgently.
"I need help. They've taken skullduggery."
"Tell me where you are," Janisarov said. "I'll send someone to pick you up."
Chapter 14. Elemental Magic. China Sorrows was very still. She sat with her legs crossed, hands flat on the arms of the chair. The sounds of the city at night did not seep into her apartment. They were alone in here, the only two people left on the face of the earth. Stephanie watched her and waited. The apartment was vast, occupying the space across the hall from her library. Stephanie had leapt out of the car China had sent, run up the stairs, and had been directed in here by the man in the bow tie. No time had been lost. Skullduggery was in danger, and they needed to get him back now. China spoke at last.
"How can you be sure it was Serpine?"
"What?"
Stephanie said, exasperated.
"Of course it was Serpine! Who else could it have been?"
A delicate shrug of delicate shoulders.
"We have to be sure. That's all."
"I am sure, okay?"
China looked at her, and Stephanie felt ashamed of her impatience. She lowered her eyes and closed her mouth. She was so sore. Her body was so sore. But it was all right now because she was safe, and China would know what to do. Everything would be okay. Stephanie would wait for her to make a decision no matter how long she deliberated, and she felt sure that skullduggery would be safe and well. Even if he wasn't, what did it matter? China knew what was best, and if she wanted to wait, then Stephanie would be happy to wait with her. "No," she said to herself, "that's the spell. That's China's spell working on me." She dragged her eyes up, met China's gaze, and thought she saw a flicker of surprise.
"What are you going to do?"
Stephanie asked. Shiner rose from the chair in one graceful movement.
I will see to it, she said. You should go home, dear. You look dreadful.
Stephanie felt herself blush.
I'd rather stay, she said. It could take some time before plans are in place. Wouldn't you be more comfortable in familiar surroundings?
Stephanie didn't like disagreeing with China, but she couldn't go home, not while Skullduggery was in trouble.
I'd rather stay,
she repeated softly.
Very well,
China said with a small smile.
I must leave, but I'll return when I have news. Can I come with you? I'm afraid not, child.
Stephanie nodded, hiding her disappointment. China left the building accompanied by the man in the bow tie. Stephanie stayed in the apartment for a while, but despite the fact that it was almost 3 in the morning, she couldn't relax. There was no TV, and the only book in a language she could understand was a leather-bound address book on a small table. She crossed the hall and stepped into the library. She passed a man in a porcelain mask, too engrossed in his reading to notice her. She walked slowly, reading the titles on the spines of the books, trying to keep her mind occupied. If she could find something here, a book that had what she needed, then maybe she wouldn't be so helpless next time she went up against Serpine, or anyone else. If she'd had even the slightest bit of power, she might have been able to help Skullduggery. Stephanie followed one shelf to its end, then chose another one, wandering deeper into the labyrinth. She couldn't work out the system. The books weren't arranged alphabetically or by author, or even by topic. It all seemed completely random.
You look lost.
She turned. The young woman who had addressed her slipped a book back into its place. She had tousled blonde hair, and she was pretty, but her eyes were hard, and she wore a sleeveless tunic that showed her strong arms. She spoke with an English accent.
I'm looking for a book,
Stephanie said, unsure.
This would seem to be the place for that. Are there any books here on magic? They're all books on magic,
the young woman replied.
I mean learning magic. I just need something. Anything. You have no one to teach you? Not yet. I don't know how to find anything in here.
For a moment, Stephanie felt like she was being studied. Finally, the young woman spoke again.
My name is Tanith Lowe. Oh, hi. I'm afraid I can't tell you my name. No offense. None taken. The books are arranged in terms of experience. These are far too advanced for someone without instruction. 2 rows over, you might find what you need.
Stephanie thanked her, and Tanith walked away, disappearing in the maze of shelves. Stephanie found the section she was referring to and started scanning the titles. An introductory guide to monster hunting. The Sorcery Doctrines. A History So Far. 3 names. Stephanie took the 3 names book from the shelf and flipped through it. She came to the part on taken names, a chunk of the book that went on for roughly 200 pages, and scanned the headings in bold print. She turned pages, skimmed paragraphs, looking for anything that stood out. The best advice it had for taking a name was this. The name you take should fit you, define you, and already be known to you. She put the book back, unimpressed, and scanned a few more titles before she found it. Elemental Magic. She took it down, opened it, and started reading. This was it. This was what she was looking for. She found an old chair in one corner and sat, bringing her legs up under her. Her mobile phone was perched on the arm of the chair. Stephanie held one hand closed, trying to think of the space between her hand and the phone as a series of interlocking objects. Moving one would move another, which would move another, which would move the phone. She focused, opened her hand slowly, and then snapped open her palm, like she had seen Skullduggery do. Nothing happened. She made a fist, then tried again. The phone stayed where it was, just like it had done the previous 50 times she tried.
How's it going?
She looked up as Tanith Lowe approached.
You're starting off too big, Tanith said. A phone's too heavy. A paperclip would be enough. I don't have a paperclip,
Stephanie said. Tanith took the book from her, opened it, and balanced it on the arm of the chair.
Use that, she said.
Stephanie frowned.
But that's even heavier than the phone. Not the book, just the page.
Oh, Stephanie said. She concentrated again, flexed her fingers and splayed her hand. The page didn't turn.
didn't even lift.
It takes time, Tanith said. And patience. I don't have time, Stephanie said bitterly. And I've never had patience.
Tanith shrugged.
There's always the possibility that you just can't do magic. It's one thing to know it exists, it's quite another to be able to do it yourself.
I suppose, Stephanie said.
That's some bruise you've got there.
Stephanie glanced at her arm, to where her sleeve was pulled back.
I had a bit of trouble, she said.
So I see.
Did you give as good as you got?
Not really, Stephanie admitted.
But most of the bruising was done by a tree anyway, so...
I fought just about every type of opponent you could name, Tanith said. But I've never been attacked by a tree. Well done.
Thank you.
Tanith dug into her pocket and brought out a piece of yellow porous rock. Run a bath. Let this dissolve. A few minutes in there, the bruises will be gone. Stephanie took the rock.
Thank you,
she said, and Tanith shrugged.
I don't want to scare you, but this mightn't be the best time for someone to start learning magic. Bad things are happening.
Stephanie didn't say anything. She didn't know anything about Tanith, and she didn't know how many sides there were in the coming conflict. She wasn't about to start trusting perfect strangers.
Thanks for the rock, she said.
Not a problem, Tanith responded.
Us warriors have to look out for one another.
Stephanie saw movement through the stacks. The man in the bow tie was back, which meant China had returned.
I have to go, she said at once, getting up off the chair.
She found China in the apartment, her back to Stephanie as she approached.
Have you told the elders?
Stephanie asked.
Word has been sent,
China said without turning.
You sent word? That's it?
Do not presume to question me, child.
Stephanie glared at her.
I really wish you wouldn't call me child.
China turned.
And I really wish you would pick a name so I wouldn't have to.
Why aren't we going to the rescue?
Going to the rescue?
China said with a laugh.
On our horses, is that right? With bugles sounding and flags flying. You think that's how it works?
Skullduggery has come to my rescue.
Well, they don't make them like him anymore, do they?
Sending word isn't good enough. Meritorious has to be told. Tell him that we need Skullduggery to get the scepter. Tell him that without Skullduggery, Serpine will destroy everything. Tell him whatever you want, but we have to make the elders act.
And then what? They call the cleavers to action. They call their allies together, and then we all go merrily along the war. Child, you know nothing about war. You think it's big and it's loud and it's good versus evil. It's not. War is a delicate thing. It requires precision. It requires timing.
We don't have time.
Not so. Time is in short supply, but we still have it.
So you're delaying. Why?
I cannot have chaos erupting around me until I am prepared for it. I am a collector. I am an observer. I don't participate. My resources and my standing must be secure before I can allow the uncertainty of war to crash down upon us.
And what about Skullduggery? While you're waiting for the right moment to tell everyone Serpine is the bad guy, Skullduggery might be killed.
The hesitation that flickered across China's face was barely noticeable.
There are casualties in every conflict.
Stephanie hated her. She turned and stormed back to the open door.
Where are you going?
China called after her.
I'm going to do what you're too scared to do yourself.
No, you're not.
The door slammed shut before Stephanie reached it, and she spun around. China was walking towards her, her exquisite face perfectly calm.
You have no right, China said softly, to plunge us all into war. Who are you to decide when we fight? Why should you decide when we die?
I just want to help my friend,
Stephanie said, taking a step back.
Skullduggery is not your friend.
She narrowed her eyes.
You don't know what you're talking about.
And you don't know him, child.
He has anger in him like you have never seen. He has hatred in him that you would never dream about. There is not one place he would rather be than where he is right now.
You're crazy.
He told you how he died then.
Yes,
Stephanie said.
He was killed by one of Mevalin's men.
Nefarian Serpine killed him,
Trina said.
He tortured him first, purely for fun. He ridiculed him, and he stripped him of his powers. And then he pointed at him.
Did you know that's all it takes, with that red right hand of his, for him to point, and that it's all over?
Agonizing death, Skullduggery had said. Stephanie hadn't realized he had felt it himself. She shook her head defiantly.
That doesn't change anything.
When he came back, he fought Mevalin's forces with a single-minded determination, not to defeat evil, but to have his revenge on Mevalin's lackey. Mevalin himself fell, but just as Skullduggery was in a position to claim his vengeance.
There was the truth,
Stephanie said slowly.
And suddenly, his enemy was now a protected citizen. Skullduggery has been waiting a long time to get his revenge, and he will risk anyone and anything in order to get it.
Stephanie stood up straighter.
Even if you're right, that doesn't change the fact that he's been the only one investigating my uncle's murder, or that he seems to be the only one around here who cares about what is really going on, or that he has saved my life.
And put it at risk. Every good thing he has done for you has been cancelled out by every bad thing he has done to you. You don't owe him anything.
I'm not going to abandon him.
It is hardly your choice.
What are you going to do?
Stephanie challenged.
I am simply going to ask you to do what I say.
Then the answer is no.
My dear Stephanie.
Stephanie froze. China looked at her.
I've known your name since before I met you, child. Your uncle spoke of you often.
Stephanie lunged for the door, but it was no use.
Stephanie,
China said softly. Stephanie's hands dropped to her sides, and she turned.
Tell no one of this.
Stephanie felt it inside her, and knew she would obey. Knew no matter how much she raged against it, she would obey. She had no choice, so she nodded as tears stung her eyes, and China smiled that beautiful smile of hers. Chapter 15. The Torture Room. The moon was out and the stars were twinkling, and it really was a beautiful night for pain. Serpine descended into the castle's cold, dank depths and strode through the stone corridors. Already he was beginning to smile. He came to the heavy wooden door and paused with his hand over the latch, savoring the deliciousness of the moment. The latch lifted, and Serpine stepped in.
Here we are again, he said.
Skullduggery Pleasant raised his head, practically the only part of his body he could move. Serpine had placed a binding spell on the shackles that secured him to the chair, and so, unable to use magic, the detective could only watch as Serpine closed the door behind him.
Life is a cycle, isn't it, Skullduggery? We are all destined to repeat ourselves, over and over. You at my mercy, me merciless.
You talking, the detective said. I thought you'd have grown out of the whole villainy thing by now, Nefarian. Serpine smiled as he sat in the wooden chair opposite. The room was small, with stone walls and a single light bulb hanging from the ceiling.
Being a respectable citizen wasn't for me. But then you knew that, didn't you? You warned them about me, but they didn't listen. That must have been annoying, for the elders not to even respect you enough to take you seriously.
I think it's because I'm always smiling.
Perhaps you're right. Oh, Skullduggery, what am I going to do with you?
Untie me? Serpine laughed.
Maybe later. We always seem to be at each other's throats, don't we?
Let me ask you a question. Let's pretend, just for a moment, that we live in your world, where things are crazy, and the faceless ones are real. When you call them, what do you hope to gain? A pat on the head?
How my lords and masters will reward me for my servitude is up to them. I would never presume to guess.
The door is closed, Nefarian, just us two guys in here chatting. What's in it for you?
Serpine leaned in. I get to be by their side when they raise this world, when they expunge the stain of humanity, and when it's over, I get to bask in their terrible glory. Skullduggery nodded.
Yeah, I haven't a clue what you just said.
Serpine laughed.
You're going to fall, Skullduggery continued.
Really?
You're going to fall hard, and I'm going to be there. I'll be the one pushing you.
Big talk from the man tied to the chair. Or are you even a man?
A thing, perhaps. An oddity.
They'll come for you.
Who will? The elders? Meritorius and his lot, please. They're too busy worrying about being rude to me.
Not after this. They're probably at your doorstep as we speak.
Serpine stood, walked behind his captive.
Somehow I don't think they would be able to marshal their forces so quickly or so efficiently. No, my old enemy, I think for the moment anyway, we're all alone. And you have something I want.
A winning sense of style?
The key, Serpine said as he walked back into the detective's line of sight.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Serpine was moving his left hand slightly, like he was conducting music.
Obviously you're not going to just offer up the information, so I think a spot of torture is required.
Ah, the detective said. Old times.
I remember those dark autumn days that I'd while away, cutting you, making you cry out.
Fun for the whole family.
You may think my options would be limited as far as torture is concerned, especially now that you don't have skin to cut. But I've picked up a few new tricks that I think you'll enjoy.
Serpine moved his fingers in a wave motion, directing it at the chair he had just been sitting on. The wood creaked and groaned as it expanded and contracted like it was breathing. The detective couldn't avoid looking at it.
If I can do that to the chair, Serpine said, enjoying the moment.
Think what I can do to bone.
There was a loud crack as the chair splintered. Serpine hunkered down in front of him.
Well, Skullduggery, where is that tired old defiance, the taunting, the goading? Where are the endless heroic cliches? Aren't you going to look me in the eye and tell me to do my worst?
Actually, I was going to ask that you go easy on me. I'm feeling kind of tender today.
Serpine stood, opened his left hand in front of the detective.
This is your one chance. Tell me where the key is.
Okay. Serpine raised an eyebrow.
Really? No, only joking. Do your worst.
Serpine laughed and his fingers started moving, and the detective started screaming.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible Kids hopes you have enjoyed this audiobook. For more like it, check out kids.audible.com.